We are practice to south. That's part of our south.
Okay.
We are holding in Perek Hay of Beit HaShoftim, trying to get through this Shiras Devorah. Every pasuk is just filled with a lot to say. It's not just telling a story. So we are holding in pasuk Ches. But before we go on, I just want to add something to what we talked about last week at the end, where Devorah kind of describes the dire situation that she stepped into. And then she says, Ad Shakamti Devorah, Ad Shakamti Ein B'Yisrael, until I, Devorah, got up, until I, the mother of Israel, got up and set things straight. So Chazal take issue with this declaration. They say that her nevuah departed from her. It was a little, perhaps, arrogant. But we learned a bit from the Bessler, the Mishnah of Eliyo, where he points out another instance earlier where Devorah says something, has great humility, and he says, obviously, you know, it's on her madrega that this sounded arrogant. That's not what she meant. It was just mechzifilera. It looks like arrogance, and he talks about how that itself could affect the person, even if you don't mean to be arrogant, and it's your position, and you're supposed to act that way, but you have to understand that even that can affect the person. And that was what Chazal were taking issue with. I heard something this past week. I heard several brachos from Rabbi Aaron Lapiansky, which I think ties in very nicely to this statement by Devorah. Noah comes out of the teva, and Hashem makes him the promise that, you know, I'm never going to send another Mabul to destroy the world. Basically, a promise that all of mankind is never going to be destroyed again like it was during the Mabul. And Rav Aaron said that if, you know, Hashem wouldn't just simply make that type of promise unless something had changed that would not require that to happen again. And so there must be a difference between Noah starting out in the world and Adam HaRishon the way that he started out in the world. So he says, right, we find Noah is commanded to bring all the animals into the teva. And that's how he's supposed to save all the creatures of the earth. Why couldn't Hashem just have arranged for all the animals to, you know, end up on a very high mountain or something and be saved that way? Why did that... Okay, but why, you know, to find a cave, a safe cave or whatever it is, why did the salvation have to come about through Noah? Why did he have to be the vehicle through which to save all the animals? So he says that's the fundamental difference between Adam and Noah. Adam is created on the sixth day, after everything else is created. And he sort of drops into a world that's already functioning and everything's already there. It's not something that he created or that he was part of a building. He's just thrown in there, and he's given this responsibility of Avdo Shamra to guard it. But it's not his project, in a way. He didn't bring it about. And so therefore, although, you know, a person in that situation could take some responsibility, but it's not the same as when you are the one who created this or built it. It's your project. It's you gave birth to it. So if a person has a project and it's something that they made or it's their children, it's their offspring, it's something that they developed and they created, so a person will take much greater responsibility than if they are simply appointed to that task. And so therefore, it was only that was the tikkun that came about with Noah, that this was the world that in a way he created. He saved the animals and allowed for all of the creatures of the world to exist, and so therefore he would take a greater responsibility in I guess himself, in the way that he relates the world and in teaching his offspring how to be mispacking, how tikkun olam, the proper way to treat the world. So I was thinking about that, and I thought about our pasuk in Devorah, where she declares, you know, that the previous leaders were unsuccessful in saving the situation. At Shakamti Devorah, at Shakamti Ein B'Yisrael, until I got up, the mother of Israel, that I had a different attitude towards my role than the previous leaders. I treated my role, I saw myself as Ein B'Yisrael, as the mother of Klal Yisrael. I took the responsibility for Klal Yisrael like a mother takes responsibility for her children. I saw Klal Yisrael as my offspring, my project, and something that I built. Even though I was appointed to the situation, but the approach, the perspective that I took was Ein B'Yisrael. I saw myself as their mother, and so therefore I took greater responsibility to teach them and guide them and lead them to their and lead them in a way that they could that a salvation could come about. So we're picking up in Pasuk Ches now. The Devarah continues, she says, Yivchar Elokim Chadoshim. Or depending on how you read the Pasuk, you may read the Pasuk, Yivchar Elohim Chadoshim. That they chose other gods. Klal Yisrael strayed from the path of Hashem. They chose for themselves other gods. Az Lachem She'arim. And then Lachem, from the word Melchama, the war came to the gate. As in they had to retreat into their city. Mugging in Yiroev Aroma, if a shield or a spear was seen, Barbayim Elef Yisrael in the 40,000 people of Israel. Many different approaches to what this pasuk is saying, some quite the opposite. Who are these Barbayim Elef, these 40,000? Are they from Israel? Are they from... Is it talking about the Goyim had, the Canaan had 40,000? So we'll go through a couple of approaches. So first of all, as I mentioned, some of the Mepharshim read Yivchar Elohim Chadoshim, that they chose other gods, they strayed from the path of Hashem, and then Az Lachem She'arim, and then they had to retreat to the cities, to the gates. They were persecuted. They couldn't live, as we mentioned last week, in the unwalled cities. They had to retreat into secure cities. Others read those words as Yivchar Elokim Chadashim, as in Hashem chose new ways to save Klal Yisrael, and it's a continuation of the praise of Hashem that. And Hashem chose new paths in order to bring about a nace, that he drew Sisera into this battle, and right into this valley where it was, you know, strategically to Bnei Yisrael's advantage. They were on the mountaintop. They were charging down the mountain. He drew Sisera into this trap. That was the, I don't know why it's referred to as a new strategy, but Yivchar Elokim Chadoshim, Hashem chose new ways to bring about Klal Yisrael's salvation. Az Lachem She'arim, again, I suppose if you're choosing this, if you're learning like the first way that it was that Klal Yisrael chose other gods, they strayed, so then Az Lachem She'arim is describing the difficulty that they were in, that they had to retreat into the cities. I think if you're reading the pasuk that Hashem chose new ways to fight them, to fight the Canaanim on behalf of Klal Yisrael, so then Az Lachem She'arim would be describing how they were entrapped, how the Canaanim came into the trap of Klal Yisrael, into the gate, sort of, into this valley. And then we have this pasuk, the end of the pasuk, which there's a number of different approaches to. Mugging in Yiroev Aromach, if a shield or a spear was seen by Arbayim Elef the Yisrael and the 40,000 in Israel. So the Ralbag understands this to be describing that in all of Israel, there were only 40,000 people who had weapons, who had shields and who had spears, and so that was in the entire population. So, and only two of the Shvatim were fighting here in this battle. So in this battle, we only had, you know, just do the math, only a few thousand, right, divided by six, I guess, six, two out of 12. So 1/6 of that, about, approximately. But there weren't very many soldiers with weapons here. I think we mentioned there were 10,000 men fighting. So of those 10,000, let's say, you know, maybe 7,000 of them had actually had spears or shields. Just describing the miracle of it, that they weren't well armed and still they were victorious. Another pshat that I saw was it's directly connected to the previous line of Oz Lachem Sha'ar, and then the war was in the gates in the cities, that it didn't matter if they had shields or spears. Those are weapons that are good for fighting out in the open, in the fields, and when you're charging, or when you're being charged. But since they had retreated into the cities and they were fighting at the gates of their cities, so then although they had these weapons, but they, I guess, if they could be seen as, and they weren't useful at that point because they were fighting as more of a tight battle in the cities themselves. That was where the situation had reached. And another, the Targum Yonasan over here. When I say Targum Yonasan, by the way, I don't think it's so clear that it is actually the Targum of Yonasan Ben Uziel, but all the Rishonim call it Targum Yonasan, so that's why I'm referring it as Targum Yonasan. So he gives a whole list here and he learns that it's describing the Kenanim. And he gives, I guess it's based on Medrash, a list of the multitude of armies that Sisera had at his side, and he describes that they had 40,000 generals, 5,000 swordsmen, 60,000 spearmen, 70,000 shield bearers, 80,000 archers, along with what we've already described in the past as 900 chariots. So that's Mefurish in the pasuk earlier. So Targum Yonasan is learning that Arbayim Aleph is referring to the 40,000 against Israel, but that only accounts for the 40,000 leaders, 40,000 generals of the armies, but the force that Sisera had at his back was really much larger, obviously making the miracle that much greater.
How does he read page 12?
I don't know where he gets this whole thing from in the first place, because there doesn't seem to be an inference from the pasuk.
Right.
So he must have had some mitzvah, but I guess he would read it as Arbayim Aleph Bi Yisrael against Israel.
Or maybe it's saying, like, maybe it's referring to that. We know there are 40,000 leaders from the Kananim, but did Israel even have 40,000 leaders? Like, maybe that's rhetorical. Because, like, the actual translation here says, was even a shield or a spear seen among 40,000 in Israel? So it seems to be asking, like, this, like. Rhetorical question.
Okay. Yeah. Definitely possible. Yeah. It wasn't clear to me if how he's reading the pasuk and really where he got this from. Pasuk Tes Libi Lefokik Hei Yisrael. Devorah exclaims, "My heart goes out to the Fokik Hei Yisrael, those who established the Chukim, the laws in Israel, the teachers of Torah." Hamis Nadvim Ba'am, those who give their of themselves to the nation. Baruch Hu Hashem, they should bless Hashem. The Radak offers two explanations of what Chokke Yisrael is. One is, as I described, I suppose both of his tzratim refer to them as the leaders, the Gedolim, the teachers of Israel. But first, Hamas Nadavim Ba'am, they gave of themselves to the nation. The first shot the Radak offers is that they gave of themselves, they went out to war, and they fought like everyone else, and even though they weren't necessarily trained to do that. And Dvorah says, Baruch Hashem, bless Hashem for that you were saved, for the salvation, that you were still able to defeat the enemy. Another pshat, Rashi also says this idea that that they gave of themselves to teach Klal Yisrael, to be machzir them b'tshuva, to show them the right path. And that was itself what allowed for the salvation to come about, was that the teachers of Torah taught them, taught Klal Yisrael Torah mitzvot, they returned them to the proper way, and through that tshuva they merited to be saved. Pasuk Yod, Rochvei Asonos Zechorot, the riders of white donkeys, Yoshvei Amidin, those who sit on din, the Holchei Alderech, and those who walk on the path, Sichu, you should speak, you should declare the praise of Hashem. Could be, I'm not sure. Here it refers to, I think, that they are, that these are like plush of a donkey, so the expensive ones, you know, the Cadillac. It's the Sarim, the Rishonim say. It's the officers, the princes who rode on the white donkeys. And it could be those different types of white donkeys, I'm not sure. Yoshvei Amidin, so first of all, the officers, as well as those who, the Chachamim, who sit in judgment, and the Holchei Aderech, those who travel on the road, the merchants. So all of you, she says, Sichu, you should speak of the praise of Hashem, that you were saved. Why these people, the Sarim, the leaders, that they were able to maintain their positions, or even get them back, I guess, when they were oppressed, they, you know, in a time where you're oppressed, so if you're wealthy or if you're a leader, so you don't have much honor. So when they were persecuted, they lost their honor, but they got it back. So she says, praise Hashem, the Chachamim, that they could learn and teach without the pressure and without the oppression from the Canaanim, from the enemies, and the merchants, that they could the roads were now reopened, like we mentioned last week, as she described in Pasuk Vav, that the roads were closed, and they had to travel, everybody had to travel in back roads because it was too dangerous to travel the normal roads. So the merchants now, you know, the highways were reopened, were safe again. So praise Hashem, she says. Yud Aleph. Mikol mechatzitzim, being mishabim, in place of the sound of mechatzitzim, of fates, of arrows, being mishabim, between the people drawing water at the wells, sham yitanu tidkos Hashem, there should be placed the declaration of the tidkos of Hashem, of the tzedakah of Hashem, the chesed of Hashem, Tzidkos Pirzono B'Yisrael, the Tzidkos of Pirzono, is now allowing them to return to the scattered cities. Right, earlier, again, in that same Pasuk, we described that the Yoshei, actually in Pasuk Zion, the Pirzono B'Yisrael, those who were in the scattered cities, in the unwalled, unsecured cities, had to retreat into their, they had to leave their towns and go into secure cities. So now they could return. Oz Yardu Asha'arim Am Hashem. Then the nation of Hashem went down to the gate. So again, Mikol Mechatzim Bein Meshabim, instead of the sound of the arrows, again, right? Again, they were oppressed, they were persecuted, it was dangerous to come out, to go out, and even to go draw water could have been dangerous. Instead of hearing the sound of arrows, we'll hear the sound of people praising Hashem for their salvation, the praise of being allowed to return to the prazon, to the scattered cities, and oz yardu asha'arim, then they'll go back to their gates, they'll be able to return to the gates, even if it's a if it's one of these unsecured cities, one pshat, another pshat, they'll be able to return to the sha'arim, the Torah, the gates of the study halls, of the Bata Midrashos, because they are no longer oppressed by the Canaanim. Rashi gives a different interpretation of Mikol Machatzitzim. Rashi says it refers to the sound of the stones, as in that they were nervous, that there was this constant fear of being attacked, that even when they would go draw water, they were afraid of making noise, of stepping on the stones and making too much noise. They had to do it in secret. So instead of that fear of making a sound when they went out to get their supplies that they needed, in place of that oppression, that persecution is going to be Tzidkos Hashem, Yitano Tzidkos Hashem. They'll be able to give the praise of Hashem. Pasuk Yud-Beis, Uri, Uri, Devora. Awake, awake, Devora. Uri, Uri, Dabri, Shir. Awake and speak in song. Kum Barak. Get up, Barak. Ushavei Shavicha. Ben Avinoam. And acquire, collect your booty, your bounty from the war. Son of Avinoam. So as we mentioned in the past, Chazal's approach to this pasuk is related to Devorah's declaration of Atzakamti. Devorah, we said, Chazal criticized her for speaking in an arrogant way, and they say that her nevuah departed her. And where do they see that? They see that from this pasuk, because Devorah says she davens, Uri, Uri, Devorah, awake, Devorah. She was davening that her nevuah should come back from having departed her because of that apparently slightly arrogant declaration that she was the one who could bring about the salvation. So she davens Uri Uri Devora. Why does she say here Devora Uri Uri Devora, awake Devora? So I saw an answer from the Korean Sefer and from the Ben Paras Yosef based on a Gemara. The Gemara also, I think, we mentioned way back, perhaps. But the Gemara says in Megillah Daf Yadalah, the Gemara says, Amar of Nachman, Lo Yae Yahirusa Lenashi. It's not good for women to be arrogant or to act in too high a position. Tarti Nashi Yahiran Havyan. There were two women who acted in a way arrogant, the Sanai and Shemayu, and their names are therefore something that's lowly or disgusting. And who are they? So one of them is Chada Shema Zibarta. One of them, her name is Zibarta, bee. That's Devora. Devora's name, it's an insect, it's a bee. Gemara sees this as it's something lowly, something disgusting to be called by an insect. And the other one is Chadashma Karkushta Chuda. The other one, her name was Chuda, which is a weasel. Another woman that appears in Tanakh. So Gemara says why was her name? What did Devora do that was perhaps above her? The way she should have acted, arrogant. So here it refers to something from the last parak that it says Vatishlach Vatikra LeBarak, that she called, she summoned Barak to come to her. The Igu Ihi Lo Azlo LeGabe, but she didn't go to him. She summoned him. Maybe he was her husband, maybe he wasn't. But Chazal saw that as something that she shouldn't have done to make Barak come to her rather than that she go to him. So exactly that. It's a good question. So I'm not sure exactly what the pshat in that is, but what I want to bring out from this Gemara, what the Ben Paras Yosef says, is that you see that Devora, the name Devora itself, was in a way something lowly. And so when she says, Uri, Uri, Devora, awake, awake, Devora, it's part of her tshuva, part of her sort of trying to fix the situation that We said that her nevuah departed her because she acted arrogantly. She said, "Atzakamti devora atzakamti in b'yisrael." So I got up. So now she's trying to replicate the rectify the situation, and so she acts in a humble way and declares herself, "Uri, Uri, devora, wake me! I'm just devora. I'm just this lowly person." Now what you're maybe thinking is, what about when she said "Atzakamti devora"? Even there, she said she called herself Devora. It's a good question, and he doesn't answer it. I think we could say still in that context, it was like almost arrogant to speak in the third person there. Like, so I Devora got up, or it could be that no, there's a grain of humility even within what she was saying. You know, in declaring herself, you know, the successful person, but there was still, as we mentioned, certainly she, it was on her level that Chazal take issue with her saying this, and so it could be even then she said Devora to, "So I'm not so great, I'm just Devora," but even still, Chazal criticized her with see her madrega according to her level for acting in that way. So here she says Uri Uri Devora. And then she says, "Uri, Uri, Dabri Shir, awaken, awaken my Nevuah, because I'm going to sing this Shir." Why does she now mention the Shir? So, the, the Siach Yitzchak, the son of the Ben Paras Yosef, and his Ha'aros on this piece by the Ben Paras Yosef, he says that we can add now perhaps that the reason why she says Uri Uri Dabri Shir is based on a medrash at the beginning of the next parak in Shoftim. The medrash says that Kol Misha Yirta Omar Shira, Omar Shira, whoever wants to say a Shira can say a Shira anytime. Says no. Ela Kol Misha Nasa Lones. Anyone who's had a miracle performed for them says a Shira. And then the Medrash continues, the Chol Mi Shenasa Lo Neis Omer Shira, and anyone who has a miracle performed for them and as a result sings a Shira, B'yadua Shemochlin Lo Al Kol Avonosav V'nase Bria Chadasha. He can know that he's had all his Averos forgiven and he's like a new creation. So over here he says, he gives the Medrash goes on to give examples of this, but over here we can say that's why Devora invokes that she's singing a Shir, because again she's asking for forgiveness. She's saying, "I want my Nevuah back. Uri, Uri, Dabri Shir, awaking, awaking, I'm going to sing a Shir. I'm singing a Shir," which the Medrash says brings about the Mechilah of Avonos. It brings about forgiveness for Averos, and so therefore she's saying, "Bimochel me, forgive me, Hashem, for what I did, and let my Nevuah return to me." So that's Chazal's approach to this pasuk in the more pashut pshat that the Rishonim discussed. So the Mari Kairo, I believe, was the grandfather of Rabbi Yosef Kairo, as a Peirush Navi. So he learns this pasuk that this pasuk is actually a conversation between Devora and Barak. And maybe it really preceded the Shira. As Rashi here really says on the words Uri Uri Devora, Uri Uri means like awaken in your praise and like get into it, sort of. Get excited about it. Hiskabri v'shiras. You know, strengthen it. Step it up even in your Shira. And so he says that. So the Mari Kairo says that this is Barak declares to Devora, Uri Uri Devora, get up Devora, you know, be inspired, bring out the Shira, and she responds, Uri, Uri, Dabri, Shir, she responds to him, you too, Barak, awaken, sing a Shira, Kum Barak, and then she says, get up, Barak, and Shave, Shavicha, and collect your bounty, because here it's talking about the Milchama, so she says to Barak, you know, the spoils of war are yours, so get up and collect the spoils of war. So again, I don't think it's part of the Shira, it's like, you know, we're victorious, but it's Devorah who says it to Barak because he's responsible for the Milchama side, for the war, it's the battle itself. And so she says, oh, Barak, get up and sing your songs, collect your spoils, you know, declare the praises of Hashem.
So the share here would be more, not a share of Mechila, but a share of like victory? Like that.
Right, I mean, in general, the share, that is what the Shira is. It's a Shira over the Nase that Hashem did. The Medrash said that when you do that, you get a Mechila for all your Avona.
Right. So when if it was a conversation, right, and Barak, the first part of the pasuk is saying Uri Uri Bora, right? It doesn't say Shir. So what is that?
I think it's still, no, you're right. It's still, she's still saying, the way Rashi says it is, it's Gabri B'Shirah, get up and, you know.
That's the verse this year as well.
Yeah. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Oz Yirad Sarid L'Adirim Am, Hashem Yirad Li Badiborim. So, then, if you strengthen in Shir, so then, if you sing out a good Shira, so then, Yirad Sarid Radirim Am. So, those who remain, Sarid, meaning the remaining ones in Klal Yisrael, will Yirad, from the word Radu, to rule over. Will rule over the Adirim Am, those mighty ones of the other nations. Hashem Yirad Riba Giborim. Sort of repetition of what she just said, that Hashem will give us the ability to rule over the Giborim, even the mighty ones of Canaan, the mighty ones of other nations.
Translate it as like has given me. Uh-huh. Is it kind of just saying like, as you're actually like, this is what will happen, and now it's actually happening. And we are leaving. Like, I am the survivor, and Hashem has given me domination over the child. So like, the first part of the pasuk is kind of like setting it up, like this is what will happen, and then the second part of the question
is
saying, this actually occurred.
You definitely could read it that way.
Okay.
The Mitzudas David, I think it was. Yeah, Mitzudas David said it's just Kafal Adavar Dimash Amash. He just was sort of repeating herself that the way he says it is Kasher Yisfazi Kasher. The Oz is then, if we do what we just said, Uri Uri, and we strengthen and cheer, so then the Tisgaber at the Shua and the salvation will sort of become even stronger, become even better, even greater. Oz Hanisham Yisroel Linshol Badire Am, then those who remain from Israel will rule over the mighty ones of the other nations, and then Hashem Yiradri, Hashem will give me rulership over the strong nations. And says she was just sort of repeating it.
Right. Like, I mean, obviously she's referring to herself as the Sarid.
Right. No, I think she's referring to the Sarid is not just her.
No, right. I think that she's
anyone. She's amongst
them. Yeah.
Yes. The Malbim has a more detailed approach to this pasuk, quite different. That and actually these two approaches, I believe, will continue into the next pasuk. That Dvorah is again comparing herself to the previous Shoftim that came before her, just like she did when she said, you know, in the days of Shamgar and you know, things the situation was dire, the roads were closed, etc., until I became the prophet, the prophetess, the leader, the shofet. So again, here she says, us then, referring to in the days of Ehud, who preceded Shamgar, and things were pretty good in the days of Ehud, but still, how did it come about? She says, Yarad Sarid, the Sarid, as in Ehud. Ehud was a Sarid, he was a escapee. Because Ehud, we remember, is the one who went into the chamber of Eglon, the king of Moab, and killed him, and snuck out, assassinated the king, and was able to sneak out and escape. And so, and that was the beginning of the salvation, basically, in his time. So he's referred to as the Sarid, the one who escaped. So he, the Sarid, who escaped from Eglon, so he was able to rule over, to control. Again, the word rod we're reading as control or rule over the nation of Moab, but that was only with Adirim, with the aid of Adirim, of mighty ones on his side, as is described there. That, you know, many came to many soldiers came to his assistance, that they had a sizable force, and they were fighting an which the Malbim says it means like not such a strong nation. So he says, okay, so basically, then Yerad Sarid, the Sarid Ehud, the escapee, was Rad, he ruled over Adirim with Adirim, the weaker nation. However, not so for me. What happened with me is Hashem Yaradli. Hashem is the one who was Yaradli, who fought for me. It wasn't my hand. It wasn't Adirim on my side. It wasn't because I had mighty ones on my side. And it wasn't an just a weak nation. It was Bagiborim. It was strong ones. So the Ehud escaped, and with the help of Adirim, with the help of mighty ones, he was able to win over not such a strong nation. However, but for me, Hashem Yarad Li, Hashem fought for me. There was no human strength involved in this. It was a total nace. Hashem fought on our behalf, and it was Zagiborim. It was with a very strong nation, the Canaan, and we were able to emerge victorious.
So Oz is just referring to whatever time Ehud was like.
Right, Oz. Then, in the days of Ehud, this is what happened. But for me, Hashem Yeradli, Hashem fought for me. Pasuk Yadalid, Mini Ephraim. Actually, I'm not going to go on. We're going to hold it here. 10:45.